Good evening. Oh, excuse me. Bobby Henderson, you caused me to do that. You got up here last night when you started your lecture and you said good morning. And you know how easy I get mixed up. Oh. I tell you what, I sure am glad that I've had some Christadelphian thinking in regard to miracles, because I saw something this morning that would, I mean, it would almost cause me to believe in a miracle. Do you brothers and sisters know Brother Ian Finley? I want you to look at that man. I have never seen him with a hair out of place. Look at him. I went in the bathroom this morning, and he came in there with a shave. And I have never seen anything like that in my life. I don't know how. It's a miracle. I don't know how he does it. I never saw so much hair sticking up on a man's head in all my life. It's a miracle. It's got to be. If it wasn't for my Christadelphian teaching about miracles, I'd believe in them. The higher command, my sister wife, she told me that I talked too fast yesterday, and I don't believe it. I can't talk fast. But if I did, I apologize. I've got a lot of material to cover, and maybe I did get in a hurry. I didn't think I could talk fast, though. That surprised me. The title for my class this week is Not My Will, But Thine. And I asked the class three questions yesterday morning. And you're going to hear these every morning this week. But you're going to remember God's will when you leave here. Does it really matter to us that God exists? Are we prepared to do His will? Do we know what His will is? Now, yesterday, we talked about some men and some people. Some of these knew what God's will was and is, and they were prepared to do it. We talked some about Jesus Christ, and we talked about Paul. And we can certainly say that after Paul was baptized, that he knew what God's will was, and he certainly did it. We also talked about King Saul. This man was not prepared to do God's will. And we talked about the Israelites a little bit. They weren't either. And at the end of class, we started to talk about a brother back in the early days of the Ecclesia. This brother was not only a teacher, but he was a serving brother in the Ecclesia. He was also a defender of the truth. And he was prepared to do God's will. Because one day, he had to give his life. He was prepared to do God's will. After the stone throwers had departed, a group of sorrowing men carried the torn and bleeding body of their friend to its resting place. Amid many signs of grief, they lovingly deposited it in the earth. The dead man was Stephen. He had angered the Jewish leaders by his defense of Jesus and by his criticisms of their actions. Stephen was one of the seven men appointed to regulate and control welfare work among the needy in the ecclesia. And these seven men were also effective teachers. However, it was not long before opposition arose, and men were hotly disputing with Stephen. He was not an easy opponent. They could not hold their own against him, against the wisdom with which he spoke. And then follows the repetition of history. There was the blackening of innocent character with accusations of blasphemy and disloyalty. And I would like to throw something in here. Brothers and sisters, why do we have to blacken the reputation of a brother or sister if we do not agree with them or do not get along with them? I think we need to think about that right now. Why, and I said you and me, why do we have to blacken the reputation of a brother or sister if we disagree with them or we have some kind of personal problem with them? It's not necessary. We don't have to do that. But back to Stephen, some things were said about him that weren't true. Now, violence is always the weapon of wicked men. Violence is always the weapon of wicked men, and they will not hesitate to use it if they cannot get their way honestly. And I'll also throw in this. Violence should never come up in our body. No violence on the part of Christadelphians. I mean, we've had brothers go to CO camps. There should never be violence from our body. Violence is always the weapon of wicked men, and they will not hesitate to use it if they cannot get their way honestly. Well, I came from the world out there, and violence at one time was a part of my life, and I really have a problem with brothers or sisters that lose control of themselves and they're in this area. If we can't control ourselves, we should be quiet until we can. It has always been this way during the reign of men. But the Bible shows us that the day is coming when justice and fairness will prevail on earth under the rulership of Christ. And I look forward to that day. Justice and fairness. Okay, the false witnesses did their work thoroughly. They stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes and came upon him and caught him and brought him to the council. The record now takes us directly to the proceedings of the Sanhedrin, the highest council of the Jewish people. Are these things so? Asked the high priest. The whole of Acts chapter 7 sets out Stephen's defense against the charges and the consequences. He traces a course through Israel's history, a well-worn path that anyone can check All you need is your Bible. It begins with Abraham. The first of seven direct quotations made by Stephen from the Old Testament was the one also quoted by Paul in Galatians chapter 3, verse 8, where he says that the gospel was preached to Abraham, citing Genesis 12, 3. This was important evidence then, and it's important evidence today. The gospel was preached to Abraham. Stephen's long recital of events, well known to his listeners, must have seemed wearisome. But he was at pains to show that the experiences of their fathers had been foreseen and were in fulfillment of prophecy. No doubt he carried his audience with him easily enough to verse 36 of chapter 7 and verse 37 too. Why, at this point, must he quote Moses from Deuteronomy 8:15? A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren, like unto me, him shall ye hear. A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren. The accused man was now changing his tactics. His words were deliberately chosen. He was beginning to put pressure on his hearers. He stressed the willful disobedience of the past, related how the people in their hearts turned back again into Egypt, and how they rejoiced in the worship of the forbidden calf. Suddenly, the patience and self-control of Stephen gives way. Like a river bursting its banks, the words tumbled out. He told the Jewish leaders that they were no better than their forefathers. Let's turn to Acts chapter 7. Verses 51 through 53. Acts 7, 51 through 53, or 52. Ye stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, You do always resist the Holy Spirit, as your fathers did, so do ye. Which of the prophets have not your fathers persecuted? And they that have slain them which showed before of the coming of the Just One, of whom ye have been now the betrayers and murderers. At these words, the anger of the assembly erupted. They were cut to the heart. They cried out with a loud voice, stopped their ears, and ran upon him with one accord. With murder in their hearts, they dragged him out of the city to a place where he would be stoned without mercy. They were living examples of the words of condemnation to which they had to listen. The record gives a final picture. Life is ebbing away, but Stephen's mind is still alert. No malice or revenge. No malice or revenge. That's something else that we don't need in our body, is malice or revenge. No malice or revenge is in his mind, for with his last breath he pleads, Lord, lay not this sin to their charge. This tragic story fills the mind with horror, yet do we notice that there was no sign of rebellion or protest on Stephen's part. no sign of weakening in his faith. Stephen shows what men and women are capable of if their faith is sufficiently firm. Truly, he was faithful unto death. Admiration grows for such as Stephen and the earlier followers of Jesus as we read about them in the New Testament. There were men in those days with a spiritual stature almost beyond our comprehension. Let's look at Acts chapter 5. I'm going to pass on over that. That's too much reading. I'm going to pass that. I don't have time to cover it. Stephen died in the defense of the gospel. You can put that in your notes if you want to. It's Acts 5, 17 through 42. Acts 5, 17 through 42. Stephen died in defense of the gospel preached to Abraham, the gospel of Christ, the only gospel that can save. We can be sure that he will be recompensed in the kingdom age. The quiet dignity of his death should be an inspiration to us, as no doubt it was to many who saw him die. And I had a point there for picking Stephen as an example of someone who was prepared to do God's will. He was not only prepared to do God's will. Take, for example, us. We go to meeting. We take care of things at meeting. We attend gatherings, we take care of the gatherings, we attend Bible schools. We do God's will in these situations. Can we do God's will daily, the other days of the week? Right here in Acts chapter 7, it's an example of a man who truly strove to do God's will daily. And one of those days, he had to give his life. This man was truly prepared to do God's will. And he was prepared to do it daily. And he is an example that's been given to us. Seven weeks after the death of Jesus, 11 of his followers, plus some women, embark on a great endeavor. They go to Jerusalem and declare his resurrection. Now think about this. They said, "This Jesus did God raise up, whereof we are witnesses." And who were these 11 men? They were fishermen and peasants. Within 20 years, against extreme opposition, the claim of these Galilean peasants had spread through every town of the eastern Mediterranean area.
Think about it. We're talking about 11 fishermen and peasants and some women. And what they taught spread over the entire Mediterranean area. And in just 50 years, think about how short 50 years is. It began to threaten the peace of the entire Roman Empire. I can't get over that. The same claim that those peasants preached comes down to us. This Jesus did God raise up, whereof we are witnesses. Why, after Jesus' death, did Saul of Tarsus, who tried to smash this movement, take a complete reversal and become one of its greatest advocates? Do you know why? Because there is a risen Christ. And all those people, those few little people that I just mentioned there, they were actual eyewitnesses. They saw Christ after he had been raised. The apostles and those few women and Saul, whose later named Paul, they were eyewitnesses that there was a risen Christ. And coming from darkness or Christendom or the world, that really that really meant something to me. Okay, another example of a man who was prepared to do God's will. Prepared. P-R-E-P-A-R-E-D. Prepared. Very important word. Prepared. I will now talk of a man who knew slavery in Egypt, but was later elevated to commander-in-chief of the Israelites. And in that capacity proved himself to be an outstanding soldier and strategist. There's another word I have trouble with. Can't talk too fast and I can't say the words either. Boy, that's a hindrance, you know it? Many a general has closely studied and followed this man's battle plans. They study his battle plans at West Point. He was also a statesman, exercising patience and tact. Where to write those two words down on a piece of paper on your notes? Patience and tact. Patience and tact. Not a thumb tack, T-A-C-T, tact, towards people. Patience and tact towards people. He stood as an example of faithfulness and integrity to the people, and his death at 110 years of age was deeply mourned, and his outstanding service was nationally acknowledged. Let's go back in time to the Israelites under the leadership of Moses. They're getting close to Canaan, and Moses chooses 12 spies to gather information about the land. One of the spies, Joshua. Moses instructs them, go up into the hill country and see what the land is, and whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many, and whether the cities they dwell in are strongholds. Some weeks later, the men returned from their mission, laden with grapes, figs, and pomegranates. And Sister Margie has just about got me overladen with figs. I don't know if I'm going to be able to eat any more or not.
I eat them because I like Sister Margie. I try to be nice to her. I guess I need to do. I try to be nice. You try to. I like them though, but I'm getting overladen with these figs. Oh, Moses called together all the Israelites to hear the news. "We came to the land which you sent us," reported the spies. "It flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. The people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are very large and fortified." When the people heard the report, they were disheartened. "Why does the Lord bring us into this land to fall by the sword?" Only Joshua and Caleb were convinced that Israel had the strength to conquer Canaan, 2 out of the 12. "Let us go up at once and occupy it," they said. Well, what did the other spies say? "We are not able to go up against them, for they are stronger than we are." A mood of anger and resentment swept through the assembly. "Let us choose a captain," they cried, "and go back to Egypt." That's always been hard for me to comprehend, why they would want to go back to Egypt. But they did. Listen to the words of Joshua and Caleb. "The land is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, He will bring us into this land and give it to us. Do not rebel against the Lord. Do not rebel against the Lord. Do His will. Do not fear the people of this land." These Israelites did not want to go into the land. They wanted to stone Joshua and Caleb. Well, let's see what happened. Numbers 14, 26 through 33. Now this is what happened to those Israelites that didn't want to go into the land. They didn't want to do God's will. 14, verse 26. "And the Lord spake unto Moses, unto Aaron, saying, How long shall I bear with this evil congregation which murmur against them, me? I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmur against me. Say unto them, As truly as I live, saith the Lord, as ye have spoken in my ears, so will I do it. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you according to your whole number from 20 years old and upward, which have murmured against me. Doubtless ye shall not come into the land, concerning which I swear to make you dwell therein, save Caleb and Joshua, the two men that wanted to do what? Do God's will. But your little ones, which you said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. But as for you, your carcasses, they shall fall in this wilderness, and your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years, and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. Now Joshua strove to do God's will. And let's look at Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. Joshua 1:1-9. "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place
that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea, toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, say I will be, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper, P-R-O-S-P-E-R, whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. Joshua lived 110 years. Seldom did he see an uneventful day. Go read about his life. He had an exciting life. In the final hours of Joshua's life, he gathers the nation together and delivers an emotional charge, pleading with them to remain true to God. To remain true to God. And he had experienced the benefits in this life of remaining true to God. There's benefits in this very life of remaining true to God, and Joshua is given to us as such an example. I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. Read it yourself. Joshua gathered his dwindling strength and makes a last appeal to Israel to put away idolatry and serve who? Serve God. Do God's will. Thy will be done. Not my will. Thy will be done. It was God who brought their fathers out of Egypt. It was God who parted the Red Sea and destroyed the Egyptian army. It was God who stopped the Jordan, flattened Jericho, and sent the Canaanite armies fleeing. It was God who gave them a land they did not deserve, cities they had not built, and vineyards they did not plant. Choose you this day whom ye will serve. Now, what does all this have to do with us? What does all this have to do with us? What is keeping us from making a clear-cut commitment to serve God? To serve God. Now think about it. What is keeping you and me from making a clear-cut commitment to serve God like Joshua did? Why do you and I not serve God like this man did? has something or someone replaced God as the object of our love and devotion? If we want to serve God as Joshua did, we are going to have to love God more than anything and His Son, Jesus Christ. If we don't, we won't be able to do it. Has something or someone replaced God as the object of our love and devotion? Choose this day whom ye shall serve. Choose this day. Are you prepared to do God's will? You and I have to prepare ourselves to do it. Now, let's look at Joshua 24:31. Now this verse, Joshua 24:31, it tells us the kind of leader Joshua was. Look at this verse. And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua. Was he not a leader that we should pattern ourselves after? And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders that overlived Joshua, and which had known all the works of the Lord that he had done for Israel. Abel, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Joshua, Caleb, David. These men all died. Hebrews 11:13. Let's look at that. Hebrews 11:13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were to underline that word, persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confess that they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth. The fulfillment of certain promises that God had made was the hope of all these men. And Paul referred to it as the hope of Israel. Brothers and sisters, if our mind is filled with this hope of Israel, then, like Joshua, we will serve God faithfully. To keep our minds on the things of God requires the study of His Word. And a brother told me just the other day of a good way to do this. I thought this was a good idea. He said that in the morning, before reading the newspaper, he does the daily readings. And he says if he finds a verse or more that needs more attention, he'll get his Bible again and do some more study in the evening. Many of us get up in the morning, eat breakfast, read the newspaper, and we never get around to any Bible study at all. And I'm going to tell you what I think. I think if we would get up sometime during the day, people are different, but if sometime of the day we would have a prayer, just ourselves, if we would do our daily Bible readings or some type of Bible study, and then sometime that day have some intensive Bible study, I tell you what I think. I think we'd be a lot better prepared to do God's will. And we've just got a few minutes left, and I'm going to stop because I don't want to start my next section yet.